Hi, everybody. I am Stu. Can we see my slides? Oh, is something gone wrong straight up? There we go. Here we go. And now I can't see my cursor. Right. Cool. So I kind of lied to everybody. It's actually 1 hour, 3 minutes, and 20 seconds. I'm sorry if that's a bit of a letdown, but that is my like fastest time at playing the game Half-Life 2. If you don't know what I'm talking about and I'm getting straight into things a bit too quickly, don't worry. I'm going to explain what is speedrunning. I'm going to explain what is Half-Life 2. So just to keep everybody on the same page. So Half-Life 2. It is a video game that you can play on your computer. I would say it's quite a significant game to PC gamers. I'd expect a lot of people know what this game is at an event like EMF. I'm not going to get into the lore of Half-Life 2 and everything. Just probably going to chuck this out there now, a little disclaimer that I put this presentation together in the campsite over the last 2 days. I've not run through this at all, so if I need a bit of breathing space, that's why. But yes, released in the year 2004, and here's the most 2004 thing I could think of to put into a presentation to go along with that. Developed by Valve Software, which is, to give a quick brief overview of them to fill you in, they're like a bunch of like ex-Microsoft devs basically that formed in the 90s because they wanted to make games. And they have been very successful since then. They are a household name. I don't need to explain Valve Software here, I guess. Half-Life and Half-Life 2 were built off the Quake engine, which was developed by legendary programmer John Carmack of id Software. And this guy was like known for kind of reinventing the wheel a bit in how he would like code and design and approach problems that had yet to be solved, very often making like better use, more efficient use out of like the existing hardware limitations of the times. And it's worth keeping that in mind with what I'm about to talk about, because we're going to get into how these how the Source Engine is exploited in order to play the game faster. So that leads into what is speedrunning. So speedrunning is where you sit completely still in a chair and you play games as quick as you can. From start to finish, there's lots of different categories, lots of different rules. Like, it depends, depending on the game, on the community, like how you define a game as being played from start to finish. Usually these categories are designed around what's the most fun to play, what's the most fun to like watch, or whatever. I mean, it gets really technical. There's a whole thing called like TASP running, which is tool-assisted speed running, I think is what that stands for, where you like program the input into a game, so you can like get the theoretically like best possible runs, and like people really just enjoy doing that, even though they're not actually like playing the game. And yeah, that's just an example of one of the different categories. So I'm going to be talking about the category I run is any percent, no void clip, I think it's called. Let's get into it. So I'm going to run through a few concepts. I could go on for hours talking about Half-Life 2 speedrunning. It's really interesting. I think like one of the things that like attracts me to it and why I decided to like share some of this through the form of a talk is like, there's this whole like alternate world of physics that has been coded not with the intention of how we exploit it. There's not really, like, even the developers of this game don't really understand what's going on when they watch one of these speedruns happening. There's a great video on YouTube of the Half-Life devs watching a run, by the way. I highly recommend it. And they're trying to guess what's going on when they're seeing all this crazy stuff happening. And they're like completely wrong about what is actually going on in the background and how we are like manipulating it. So I'm going to talk like those tricks is what I find like really cool, and really there's only like I feel like 100 of us that can really explain these things. So I just thought it would be really cool to share. But obviously, there's been There's some like great videos on YouTube of people breaking these things down. So actually, when I say 100 of us, that's probably not true. But yeah, anyway, that's what it's about. So I'm going to focus on a couple of different exploits that we do in order to play the game faster. So the first of those would be what we call accelerated hopping. We can do backside and front, ABH, ASH, AFH. If you hear me say that, that's what I'm talking about. There is save loads, and there's something called Bill's Big Frill, which is, I believe it was discovered by someone called Bill. I think, I don't really have any more information of that. And there's also something called Yes Clip that I'll chuck on the end if we have time. Yes, because I put this together so last minute, I'm not really sure if I'm going to go over, under. I'm completely winging this. Cool. So, let's get into hopping. So, when Gordon appears in the game and he wants to hop, imagine you're like running along and you take a jump. You get a boost in speed when you jump, so the player like really feels that like launch, that like motion going forward. So accelerate. The way that works is that there's, Gordon has a velocity. Gordon is the character you play, by the way, this little guy. And yeah, some slight acceleration is applied to it. His velocity, and when he lands, this is where the fun happens. There's checks going on in the game to sort of sort things out, make sure that there's no funny business going on. So, for example, let's say like you jumped as a grenade went off right behind you, and it sent you like flying. The game doesn't want you to keep that momentum when you land and just like ping off into the distance. But as runners, we really want that momentum. I have to explain some physics stuff now. The way it slows you down when it's doing that check, it applies like a reverse force to you. There's a little animation of jumping. Quickly, I just want to describe the difference between like speed and velocity. This is just to get you thinking a bit more as to what the engine is thinking about when it's applying that reverse momentum to you. So speed is basically, just think a bit about it, it's like how fast you're going. Direction is not a variable when we're talking about speed. Whereas, velocity is more which way are you going. Like I could say, I'm going 10 miles an hour, that's my speed. But if I'm going 10 miles an hour directly north, that's like more important information really than speed. And for a game engine, That's what it really needs to know. So this is where some of the magic happens. So like I was talking earlier about this deceleration force that's applied to you when you land. And the calculations that do that, they want to slow you down. If I'm going this way, I'm going too fast. They want to slow me down. They want to apply a reverse force. So I come to a smooth stop. They don't just set it to zero. So in order to work out that force, they need to work out the velocity. And the way that Source Engine gets the velocity isn't by any of the actual movement going on. They get it in a really cheap way, which is assuming the player is looking forward. So the way the player is aiming, like their crosshair, is the sort of basis for the direction of this reverse force that's going to be applied. So you might be able to work out, especially based on what this slide is called, how we can exploit that. If it's done based on the direction that it's looking, like what happens if we are jumping backwards and we go too fast, the game tries to apply some reverse momentum to us, but it thinks because we're looking the other way around, it applies that reverse momentum the other way around. So we end up going super fast. And this scales as well. So every time we hop, every time we hit the ground, we get faster and faster and faster, to the point where it becomes pretty uncontrollable, and we have to kind of hit the ground a little bit and actually let him kind of slide. And we want some of this force to be applied properly before we take this exploit in, so that we don't go flying off in an uncontrollable direction, because the precision is like quite important. There is also something called front hopping. So I was saying earlier the way it gets the direction to apply that reverse momentum is by the view of the player. But there is an override at the very end of that file, which takes player input into consideration. So when I'm talking about, like, say you're pressing forwards or backwards, or like a stroke key to either side, which overrides it. So the annoying thing about back hopping is you can't see where you're going, right? It's really nice to be able to see where you're going when you're speedrunning. Especially because these numbers are never the same. You can't really do it with like muscle memory alone. There'll be like a lot of luck involved, and we do not like luck in speedrunning. We want everything to be as precise as possible. And so front hopping is really nice. So yeah, as I was saying, the input of the player does override it. So if we tap backwards, the backwards key on the keyboard, just as we land, the game thinks we're going backwards. It just overrides everything, and we'll be able to get that reverse momentum applied in a forward direction, and it's great. And I'm going to show you what it looks like. Oh, I had a slide for this. But yes, that's basically what I just explained. Whoop, 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 two jumps. So yeah, here's a little video clip of me demonstrating some ABHing and AFHing. So there you go. That's the back hopping. So all you need to do is take a little jump, turn around, and yeah, we've got some front hopping now. So this will be applying that every time he lands, applying that reverse directional input. This is a section of the game where you're supposed to be driving a car around these beaches. The cars are slow. Yeah. So you can see how I'm bouncing off all sorts of different things, all sorts of different pieces of geometry. I wasn't taking damage there. This is where I could like seriously go on talking for hours. There's like way too much happening in this clip. But yeah, I just thought after all of that talking, I'd show you a nice little video clip. But yeah, the way you land is like very important and things like that to make sure you're not like losing too much health. Health is a variable in speedrunning that in Half-Life in particular that you really need to watch. Due to the amount of times that we are damaging ourselves with grenades and rockets in order to get that extra speed boost that we need to make it over a wall. Cool. I'll talk quick about save loads. It's not as interesting as back hopping, but... so yeah, I've got this first line here. It's like a console command that I would type into the Source engine, which is like why it's such a good engine. It lets you do that. So I would bind my J key on my keyboard to save a game called Save Load, and then immediately load that game called Save Load. And what that basically causes my J key to trigger is the engine just reloading on demand. And when the engine reloads, things load in a different order. Ticks in the engine start happening before certain things have loaded in. This is amazing for skipping things. And also, for example, let's say, I was like stuck in a wall where I shouldn't be, and I somehow had some velocity applied to me, but I wasn't going anywhere. The game is kind of trying to resolve Gordon's position. It's like, hey, he's not in the level. Let's move him a bit closer to the level. But if I have a load of velocity pushing me the other way, it might push me that way. Mysterious things happen during save loads. And yes, they are used very frequently. But yes, they can displace scripted animations. They can like kind of make things happen at like different times. For example, I'm about to show you something called Train Clip, which happens at the very, very first seconds of the game. 1.42 is, I think, what you want on the timer, is the ideal time. When you start doing my 8 save loads, for me in particular, hardware dependent. And what this is doing is, yeah, at the beginning of the game, you're in a train ride, which takes about 30, 40 seconds. That's like a long time to just be stood there doing nothing. We want to get out of that train. So we do a couple of save loads, and the carriage behind desyncs because it loads in at a different time. And we kind of get pushed. The train goes around a corner. It kind of pushes the player out of the train, and then we're out, and we can just start bunny hopping, get straight to where we want to be straight away. Here's a clip of Train Clip. So this is what you're seeing. This is what the Valve devs are like. What's going on? What's happening here? You saw that loading thing. That was me doing save loads. I jump backwards. That train that is now desynced just pushed me out. And I'm off, just hopping. Woo! There we go. See, that saved like 20, 30 seconds. Yeah, and here's another one that I was talking about where you are using the velocity that you've stored up to like push yourself through a wall. So yeah, this is a chapter called Entanglement. There's a really long cutscene that we really don't want to do. So what I did there is I save-loaded with a bench on top of me, made me sink into the floor. Now I've got a grenade out. I put that in a very specific spot and launch an SMG node in a very specific spot. I save load, switch to an FPS bind to make it 30, which helps this so I can touch that turret. I didn't practice doing this live. This is way too much happening. but yeah, you can see how I was like basically moving through the walls using save loads there. Save loads are great. Okay, so here we go. Bill's big thrill. So yeah, back to John Carmack's Quake engine. So what's really important to understand for this trick, this is going to lead up to a big explanation of a big skip, by the way. But you need to understand all of this first. So Gordon has two hitboxes. He's got his, oh, I didn't test the animations for this one. I don't know what's going to happen. Hey, we got John Carmack hitbox. And the Havoc hitbox. So the Havoc hitbox was, I think the Quake hitbox is the one that kind of came out of the box when these guys adopted the old engine. But they wanted like physics in there, stuff that Quake didn't have in it. So for some reason they decided to add a separate hitbox. Now these hitboxes usually are in exactly the same place. So the Havoc box is constantly teleporting to make sure it stays in sync with the Quake hitbox. But you can break it, and it's really useful. So if Gordon touches a physics object, the Havoc hitbox then takes priority and the Quake hitbox starts pulling itself back. Really, in normal gameplay, this doesn't matter because they're always in the same place, right? And it's also important to note that when you like crouch, your hitbox immediately changes to a smaller one. So it's kind of like four hitboxes, really. It's like a crouch, crouch and a standing for each of the Quake and the Havoc one. Oh, yes, okay, yeah, cool, little animation, they're always together. So I really wish I could explain this next bit, but nobody really understands what's happening here, but we know how we can leverage it. So the best kind of guess is that there was going to be some vehicle physics in the original Half-Life 2 release that were worked on, and there was some leftover code left in the game. That's what we think is happening, because there is an enemy vehicle that's parked on the street in a certain scene, and it's got very, very weird tires. They act very strange. So we imagine it's something to do with like what was supposed to happen to items when one of these vehicles drove over a physics prop, and there's some unfinished code there. And yes, we all like rubbing this magic paint can. Very, if you rub it just in the right place, so it's not quite touching the model of the wheel, but it's still within its kind of physics hitbox, then it just starts floating off. But technically, it's still not moved, because its hitboxes are now messed up. And what is really weird is if we touch this paint can, like Gordon's model touches this paint can, when it's in that state, then we kind of get that state too. Now, what this allows us to do, this state, this special state, means that our Quake hitbox now can desync from us under certain circumstances. So imagine I'm like walking along here, and I've got like two hitboxes stuck to me, and I jump. Now my Quake hitbox is actually frozen in time here, as long as I crouch before I land. And I can just stay crouched, walking away, and that Quake hitbox is still there. Now if I stand back up, the Quake hitbox is just going to go boop back onto me. But if we remember that if I touch a physics object, then the Quake hitbox, which is still me, will sink straight back to where that one is. And what's great is that when I jumped, that Quake hitbox, the Havoc hitbox has stored that velocity, so I'll like continue that jump again as I was. So that's a thing, we can do that in certain areas of the game. These animations, I don't know what's going on here. You can tell I was copy-pasting slides. Right, yeah, this is kind of what I was just explaining. Yeah, don't think I've missed anything here. So, oh my goodness. Star programmer. Okay, so, yes, I mentioned we hate cutscenes, right? Like, we there is a very, very long cutscene right at the beginning of the game in a chapter called Red Letter Day. It's a famous one. It's where Dr. Kleiner loses his pet head crab, Lamar, and Barney talks about a traumatizing story he had to do with one of the teleporters involving a cat, and it's where you also get the HEV suit, which is like Gordon's main armor. We can't sprint until we get this suit. which is quite a big incentive to go through this cutscene so we can get it. But it takes 8 minutes right at the beginning of the game. I could probably rehearse the entire script for that because of how many times I had to sit through it before I was good enough to do Red Letter Day Skip. It's a real, real important one. So this was discovered about 6 years ago, I think. So what do we need to do? We need to use... There's a couple of cutscenes leading up to it, too, which we unfortunately do need to trigger. So we need to use BBT to escape Bill's Big Frill, to sort of escape one of these cutscenes. And what we want to do is we want to place our Havoc hitbox somewhere, and then we want to go back in and carry on these cutscenes in order to get the next level to load. And then we want to go back to our Havoc hitbox once that level has loaded and fly all the way around the lab straight into the next load level trigger so that we don't have to sit through, Red Letter Day for the 500th time. This is really difficult. It's one of the hardest skips in the game. I myself only have a 25% success ratio of doing it. If you mess it up, you have to reload. You basically have to start the run again because you can't save your game when you're in this state. And that's also why I'm not going to try and demonstrate this live. I'm making some slides and videos. So I'm going to explain that again with a bit more of a diagram. So we can see, we've got the first map that you're in on the left-hand side. Then there's map two. You'll notice there's a bit of a crossover in where these maps are, position-wise. So as what we are going to be aiming to do is to set that Havoc hitbox where those two maps are crossing over. The only place we can really do that that's good, though, also is outside of bounds of the map. The yellow area in this diagram is where you're supposed to be. So we need to get out of there somehow. In the little green box you can see at the bottom there, that is the load level trigger. One thing I forgot to mention, when we are in the BBT state, if a new map loads, we lose the BBT state. So how do we get the next map to load and touch a physics object in order to transport our Quake hitbox back to the Havoc hitbox? And we have to basically do it in the same tick is the answer to that. So Gordon will load in the level about here. There's a bit of a scripted rooftop chase going on, which we don't really care about. What we're going to do is pick up the magic paint can. We're going to bounce. That last arrow that appeared is where we're trying to get to for the next load trigger. We've got to leave the bounds. We've got to go to the special car with the special tire, initiate Bill's Big Frill. We've got to push that paint can through the thing. We've got to jump into it, get the state. More weird things happen. You can float about. I've not gotten into it in the sake of time. But yeah, and then we've got to get back into the level to trigger this cutscene with Alex. Then we need to go back out of the level. We need to set our Havoc hitbox in place. And from this point on, we've got to stay crouched so that it doesn't reset. Then we've got to get back into the level. And then we've got to go into the level change trigger. We've got to hit a physics project up, a physics prop at the very same tick of the engine that load level trigger is triggered, and if it all goes right, we should appear flying up in the sky, and we can go all the way around Red Letter Day's cutscene. So here's a video of that happening. Starting with the magic paint can, you can see it's now floating off. We do an AFH crouched into it. This is the bit I didn't quite explain that's happening. Let's just ignore this one for now. We jump down here, we go, we trigger this first cutscene, which allows, we can't progress without doing this. I think I'll speed it up a little bit there. We meet Alex Vance for the first time. So now what we're doing is we're doing a sort of mini version of this. We're going to jump here, we've just set our Havoc hitbox, we're going to touch it with an item, another thing I didn't explain, but if you touch it, it keeps that momentum. So when I jumped into that wall and I've touched it, it's going. And because it's moving, it's actually pulling the Quake hitbox with it. I uncrouch to land here. I'm going to do some ASHs into some standing ABHs. I'm going to crouch right here. I'm going to bounce back into the level and get through this window, which I absolutely hate doing that a bit. Do some strafe hopping, this is called, into the lift. We continue on the cutscene. I decided to just let this play, thinking there's probably something I've got to explain here. I think I did a pretty good job there, actually, in real time. We just listen to some of Alex's dialogue. And now what we want to do is pick up our physics prop, and it needs to be in an insanely precise spot for this to work. So yes, everybody likes to use this palette because it's nice and flat on one end, making it quite a consistent prop to do this trick with. I will be looking now, when I'm playing, at the sort of like values you can see up in the top right there, at the position. And it needs to be? It's 9365.07, I think, is the number to go to. I don't think I know that's exactly what it is. So you can see me quite going there. Pop it down, do this. That, we've just teleported. The level has loaded at the same time. We go flying around the edge. That wasn't the best one. I just died there. But yeah, red letter day. This cutscene is going on down in this building that we've just hopped over. And then we jump down here. We do two save loads and a save delete, so we get that HEV suit that we just missed. And that is red letter day. Skip. So I don't think we're going to do a quick clip, but if you are interested in like learning how to speedrun Half-Life 2, there's like an amazing community which you absolutely will need, because we are not good at documentation. The guides to set all of this up are like dated for different builds, and there's bits missing, and just like, yeah. I recommend come to the sourcerunners.org, and you'll find the Discord in there, and everybody is amazing. If you ever want to watch me streaming, I'm Yes Hot Ashes. I'm also supposed to be doing a Half-Life run on tomorrow from like 8 till 10 in the arcade. I'm going to be running cutsceneless because, like the 25% success ratios I was telling you about, I'm going to take the easy route out. But it's about a 50-minute run. I'll go do some Q&A over at the Q&A tent as well if anybody has any questions. Thank you.